desk. I saw my handwriting, lopsidedly written in to last Monday morning. Tutor at 9 a.m. And I remembered. Getting up in the dark, pulling on the clothes I'd been wearing earlier, heading out into the dark night. That night. Allison, now. I opened my eyes, speckled ceiling tiles, a strip of fluorescent light powered off, a pouch of clear liquid hanging above my head, the tube attached to it going into the back of my right hand, a thick, heavy cast on my left, from fingers to elbow. My skin itched inside it, a throbbing in my head, and something scratchy across my forehead. A bandage? A thin blue curtain, daylight showing through from what must be windows on the other side. Welcome back. I turned and saw Malone, sitting on a chair by the side of my hospital bed. My mouth was so dry my tongue felt thick and swollen in it. I managed to croak some approximation of the word water, and Malone produced a styrofoam cup with a straw in it. He held it to my lips.
What's the damage?
I said once I'd gulped back as much as I could. A broken arm, a concussion, and I think 15 stitches in your head. Malone moved to go. I'll go get the doctor.
Don't. Tell me what happened first.
We can do that later. You should get some rest now. Your parents are in the cafeteria. They'll be back up soon.
Get some rest?
I tried to smile.
I just woke up.
They told me not to tell you anything. And I was supposed to tell someone if you woke up, so
look at me. I've earned this.
Fine. Malone sighed. What do you want to know?
Is he dead?
Yes.
He drove us into the water?
At Grand Canal Dock. He was stopped at a checkpoint on Mespel Road, and the guard there heard screams coming from the trunk of the car. She asked him to step out, and that's when he took off. A show was about to start at the theatre down there, so the place was busy. Lots of people around. Luckily, no pedestrians were injured. But it meant that immediately you had help. People jumping into the water. Apparently the car was sinking front first, and you know you can't open the doors until the whole thing is gone beneath the surface, so someone had the bright idea to open the trunk and see if they could get in through there. When they did that, they found you.
Was it him then? Conway was the canal killer?
It seems that way, yes.
Was he back then too?
Malone nodded. Yeah. 23 Doolin Gardens is a treasure trove of physical evidence. We found files on the victims, both 2007 and 2017, and even items of clothing belonging to them, some other possessions too. It seems you were right. He was using that attic apartment to gather information on St. John's students. We found stacks of forms with personal details like phone numbers, addresses, photocopied IDs, even some bank statements. Oh, and the O'Rourkes and Ennis? They're his grandparents. He was paying them rent, or some rent at least, for both houses. And he wasn't just an estate agent, Allison. He also worked 3 shifts a week as a security guard at St. John's Halls, where he made himself his own set of keys and had been regularly deleting footage from the security cameras. He paused. Without being detected, so I think it's safe to say St. John's will have a civil suit on their hands soon enough.
Did he have that job in St. John's back then too?
No. In 2007 he was a graduate student, living there himself.
God. I shook my head. It just seems so... so ordinary or something. That's not the right word, but... I don't know, I just thought...
There'd be more to it. Like he'd have special powers or something.
I couldn't understand how he was doing this. How he was getting away with it.
All he had was access. Access and something very, very wrong with his moral code. I asked if Will had known him. We're still trying to ascertain that, but it doesn't seem like it, no.
So you don't think that he was involved in some way?
It doesn't look like it, no. Remember how I said there were other prints on the folder they found in Will's locker? Preliminary testing suggests they were Conway's.
But they could have been working together.
Really, Allison, there's absolutely no evidence to support that. I think they'll be dropping all charges against him. He didn't have anything to do with this.
The blood under the desk?
Conway was living in halls himself at the time. It's not beyond the realms of possibility that he could have planted that there. Or...
Malone shifted his weight.
That someone else might have. Someone who wanted to make sure they had enough evidence to convince the DPP to accept Will's guilty plea and close the case. But, that's just a theory, and not one you heard from me.
How did this happen? Tears were stinging my eyes. How did this happen to Will?
I think Conway probably felt the net was closing in, saw that Will had been brought in, and spied an opportunity. He went about making sure that the investigation stopped at him.
What does Shaw say about the confession?
What can he say?
Malone shrugged.
I feel a bit sorry for him, to be honest. We've just caught a man who murdered 8 young women, but all the press are going to be interested in is how he made a mistake the first time around.
Why did he do it? I asked. Conway, I mean.
He seemed to think he was helping women avoid the clutches of men who would do them harm. They found a half-finished manuscript on his computer, a kind of personal safety guide for women.
You're joking.
No. Look, I'm sure it made perfect sense to him.
And then what?
He went home to twiddle his thumbs for 10 years until suddenly he felt the urge to do it all over again? The documentary I showed you, with the tapes of Will's confession. He had that recorded on his skybox. It had been viewed.
I raised my eyebrows. You think that set him off?
I think maybe he thought it was time for more cautionary tales. The theme of it was that everyone had forgotten about the Canal Killer case, after all.
Was he the man that attacked Heather Buckley, then?
We don't know.
Malone shrugged.
All she really remembers is his height, which fits. We might find something on her at Doolin Gardens yet, but unless we do, we can't know for sure.
What about Daniel?
As you suspected, all he was doing was collecting information for his blog, and continuing his crusade to free Will. He did admit leaving a copy of the letter in your hotel room. He said he was going to slip it under the door, but that when he got there, the door was open, so he slipped it in your case instead. For safekeeping, he said.
How did he know I was there?
He had a source on the inside. A friend of his from college now works as a civilian administrator in the Phoenix Park. She got wind of your trip to Dublin and passed the information on. She's been let go, needless to say.
What made Daniel think Will was innocent?
The same thing that made me think it, I guess. Not all the pieces fit.
Where did he get the letter?
He tracked down someone who'd worked on the staff of the newspaper when it came in. An old college friend of his. They had a scan of it stored on an old computer.
And Conway really sent that?
We don't know, but we think so.
Malone turned to look over his shoulder.
I think maybe that's enough questions for now. I really should go get the doc.
What about Amy? Did they find her?
Malone nodded, but I could tell by his face the news wasn't good. I asked where. In a house R&P estate agents were selling, he said. In the shed.
Shit.
How did you figure it out? Malone asked. That the guy we spoke to was Conway.
I explained about the phone number impression, Googling it. He smiled.
You'd make a good detective, you know that.
Hardly. I yawned. I only realized it when he was already in the next room.
Malone reached over and took my good hand in his, squeezed it. I'm sorry for leaving you there, he said. Once it got dark, it occurred to me that you were out in the middle of nowhere, all alone, so I sent a uniform to sit outside. But by then it was too late. When I saw your text...
What happens now?
I didn't want to talk about that.
Does Will get out?
It'll take some time for the machinery of the courts to do their business, but yeah, ultimately he will. And then he'll probably seek some kind of compensation deal. I know I would.
Malone frowned at me.
I think I'm going to leave you to go back to sleep.
Yeah, I said. My lids were getting heavy. Okay,
Oh, and your friend Sal. She called me. Got my number off your mother, apparently.
Sal called you?
She's on her way here. Her flight gets in at 5.
I smiled. Good old Sal. Have you talked to Will?
I haven't, Malone said. But I think someone has.
So he knows.
They told him this morning.
I thought of Will's last 10 years, how awful they must have been for him, how hopeless he must have felt. And Liz. Poor Liz.
When in the dark shadows of my imagination, it had been Will who'd taken her life. I saw her confused, maybe realizing too late, maybe not getting a chance to realize at all.
But with a stranger, she must have been terrified.
All these years, when I'd thought of Liz, it was always like there was something between my memories of her and my grief, that she was gone. A wall, a pane of glass. Because yes, we'd been friends all those years, but by the time we arrived in St. John's, I wasn't even sure I liked her anymore. The last things I'd said to her, they didn't bear thinking about. Stupid, teenage, immature things, forever frozen in time because of what had happened next. But worse than that, I was the reason she was dead. Because if I'd never met Will, he'd never have met her, and she wouldn't have. I stopped, pulled myself back from that particular edge. It was too much to feel, too much to let in. Grieving for Liz would come with the guilt that would, I'd always feared, overwhelm me. But now I knew it wasn't Will who'd killed her, but Brian Conway. I didn't remember him from all those years ago, from the day we'd viewed the flat in Doolan Gardens. But in my mind's eye, I inserted his face from yesterday, from last night, into the vague scenes I could recall from that September day all those years ago. And my heart broke open. For Liz. For all the life she'd missed out on. For the 19-year-old girl she'd always be. I started to cry.
It's over, Malone said. It's over.
He was still holding my hand. He leaned over the bed now, brought it up to his lips, and kissed it gently. Allison, now.
Are you sure about this?
My mother and I were sitting at her kitchen table, having breakfast, and she was asking me that question for the umpteenth time. The entire space was filled with glorious early morning spring sun, and she'd laid on such a spread that I felt like I was in a hotel. Freshly cut fruit, pastries, poached eggs on toast. I was on my second cup of coffee, the same kind I enjoyed while I was at home, because, while I'd been in hospital, Mam had made polite inquiries of Sal, our current houseguest, and her new best friend, and had gone out and bought the same machine. This was on top of the gorgeous guest room I'd been installed in, with some carefully chosen, read innocuous, things from the boxes in the back bedroom put on the shelves to make it feel like mine, and the little wardrobe of clothes and bag of toiletries she'd gone out and bought me as well. Sal had been put up in the room next door. I'd convinced my father to take her to Powers Court Estate today, just so she could say she'd seen something of Ireland while she was here, and because it meant there'd be two fewer concerned faces staring at me all day. Mam had refused to go in case I experienced an only-one-good-hand emergency while in the house by myself.
Yes, I said, still sure.
No change since you asked me 3 minutes ago.
But can't you wait? You're only out of hospital a few days, and he's only just, I want to get it over with, ma'am, okay? But why do you have to do it at all?
Because I didn't the last time. I just ran off, and look where that got me.
No, this time I want to see him. I have to apologize. You don't have anything to apologize for. I need to.
My mother turned her coffee cup with the tips of her fingers.
They showed it on the news last night.
What?
The house.
She shook her head.
You should have seen what was coming out of it, Allison. Bags and bags and bags. He must have been a right hoarder. But we didn't see anything like that when we were there, did we? I don't remember seeing anything in the halls.
He probably just kept the hallways, the stairs,
and the attic apartment clear. It's a good thing, though, ma'am, that he kept everything. Malone said that will help.
Ah, yes. My mother grinned. Malone.
What?
Can't you call him Michael?
I rolled my eyes. The doorbell rang. That'll be him, I said, getting up. I'll see you later.
Is he not coming in?
No, we have to get going. Will you bring him in later?
Later?
When he drops you back.
What for?
So I can say hi.
Absolutely not. I got up to go, then turned back to my mother. I reached down and hugged her from behind, kissing her cheek. It was soft and delicate and smelled of soap.
Thanks, ma'am, I said, for everything. And I'm sorry about everything else.
She reached up and squeezed my good arm.
You better go.
Her voice was tight.
Don't keep him waiting out there.
That fella out there in the Jeep will only be snapping more pictures. She touched her hair, checking it.
I'm going to have to get my roots done if those photographers don't feck off soon.
When I went outside, Malone had got back into his car. I sat into the passenger seat and turned to him.
Good morning.
Morning,
he said, returning my smile.
How are you feeling?
Okay. Tired.
You don't have to do this. We could put it off. He won't be going anywhere for a couple of weeks at least.
No, no. I want to get it over with.
Well.
Malone reached into the back seat and grabbed a large manila envelope with my name handwritten on it, handed it to me.
Have a look at this. I think it might make things easier for you.
What is it?
Shaw's under a lot of pressure to explain exactly what pointed to Will back then, so this was dug up.
It's the reason they made Will a suspect in the first place. Allison, it wasn't because of you at all.
Allison, now. The car slowed, then turned left into the now familiar driveway, sloping uphill. There were the two concrete pillars. There were the metal gates. The spiky razor wire curling across the top of them glinted in sun as they shuddered, then retracted, slowly opening up to let us in.
I never want to see this place again, I said.
Malone glanced at me.
You won't after this.
He parked right outside the two-story concrete block that acted as a gateway to where Will was housed, even closer than we had the other times. He told me to stay where I was, then hurried around to open my door for me and help me out.
It's just my arm, I protested.
But I let him help me in. Alec was in the lobby. He turned towards us with a smile on his face that promptly slid off when he saw mine.
Allison!
I'm fine, I said.
I felt his eyes crawl over the bandage on the side of my head. They'd had to shave a small square of hair in order to put the stitches in, and strands of the hair they'd left behind had since got itself caught in the sticky parts of the bandage, and I couldn't wash it because I couldn't get it wet and,
well, let's just say I wasn't going to be winning any beauty pageants anytime soon.
Really, it's worse than it looks. How's Will?
Alec made a tut-tut noise.
It's difficult. Two extremes, you know. He's so relieved and happy that he's getting out, but...
He sighed.
10 years is a long time, especially these 10 years when he was so young.
Yeah, I said. So do I have to go through the whole visitor screening extravaganza again?
No, we're going to put you in the family room.
And we're going to take the easy way there,
Malone said. It turned out to be an elevator.
I can actually walk, I said to him as we waited for the car to arrive. My legs are fine.
You need to take it easy.
The elevator doors opened and we stepped inside. As soon as the door slid closed, he put an arm around my waist and I leaned against him, resting. We moved apart just as the door slid open again. Down a short hallway, the family room was a smaller version of the visitor's room I'd been in the last time. As we walked down the corridor to it, it was on our left, and we could see in through a bank of windows. The room was clearly intended to make children feel comfortable. There was a playmat,
a box of toys and children's books, and colourful paint on the wall. Children coming in here, to this place, was the most depressing thing I could think of. Will was sitting inside, hands resting on the table in front of him, but he didn't react to our passing the window. One-way glass, I thought. Malone stopped me a few feet from the room's only door and turned to me.
Okay, well. He squeezed my good arm. Good luck, then. I'll be right out here.
I nodded at him and went inside. Alec was right behind us, and the same security guard from last time was already there. They took up positions on opposite walls. Will bolted upright in his chair when he saw me.
Ali? Jesus, are you okay?
I waved a hand. It's not as bad as it looks, really. I took the seat opposite him, wincing as I sat down. My muscles and ribs and back were only feeling worse as each day passed.
I heard what happened, he said.
It's all right.
I'm sorry it happened to you.
It wasn't your fault. We both fell silent for a long time. Honestly, I said then, I don't even know what to say to you.
What can you say, Ali? What can anyone?
I just feel so... I swallowed hard. I feel like I could have done so much more. I should have. Will started shaking his head.
Don't. You couldn't have. Who were you? Who was I? We were just kids, Ali. We didn't even understand what was happening to us. I know I didn't. And what you went through. Losing Liz and then seeing me. Seeing me charged. I can't even imagine it.
Will, please. Don't make this even worse than it already is by worrying about what I went through. You've been in here 10 years.
But I'm getting out. You should never have been in here in the first place. Look, Will said,
reaching across the table to take one of my hands. I let him.
Here's the way I'm looking at it. It doesn't matter what we do or what we say. We can't change the past. Not a thing about it. But we can decide what we do now. What we do tomorrow. So I say, let's wipe the slate clean. Start again. That's what I'm going to do.
He smiled.
Well, maybe not tomorrow, but whenever I do get out of here.
That's easier said than done, Will.
But it's worth doing, isn't it? I mean, what's the other option? Dwell in the past for the rest of our lives. Let what ruined us then ruin us forever.
I let go of his hand. What happens now?
My solicitor is working on it. He says a couple of weeks.
You have a solicitor now?
I always did.
He didn't want to help you before?
He had nothing to help me with. We needed new evidence.
Silence bloomed again. Then I said, have you seen him? Will nodded.
They showed me the picture from the estate agency website.
Did you recognize him?
No. Can't say that I did. But they said he was on campus back then as a postgrad. It's possible my path crossed with his somewhere. They think he knew they were closing in on him. He saw me talking to the Gardaí. He realized I knew Liz, and he got to work. Planting the folder in my locker. Planting the blood in my room, maybe. I mean, he would have had access, right? He lived there at the time. And that Daniel guy, from the Canal Killer website, I heard they'd arrested him.
They did. He was the guy in the CCTV images, and in that photo I found of all of us on a night out. But it was just wrong place, wrong time. He had a thing for Liz, but he had nothing to do with the recent cases. He's just obsessed with the Canal Killer, or was. I'm guessing he's had his fill now.
Do you think... Liz used to say some weird guy was following her, didn't she? Do you think that was Daniel?
I don't know. Maybe. Maybe she saw him once and the other times it was Brian Conway. And she just assumed it was all Daniel. I don't know. I paused. What's your plan then? For when you get out?
Besides getting some really good food and having a proper shower that doesn't smell of disinfectant... Oh, and sleeping in a room where it goes completely dark at night. I don't know, really. I did hear the late want me, though.
To do an interview?
Yeah.
I exhaled.
Wow. I know. It's crazy, isn't it?
Are you going to do it?
I think so, yeah.
He paused.
They might want you, too.
What? I laughed.
No, God no. I'm out of here. Back home to the Netherlands. Back to where nobody knows me. There'll be no primetime national TV for me, thanks very much.
Are you sure?
Positive.
We smiled at each other. I am sorry, I said.
It's not your fault.
Still.
Thank you. I wonder...
Will stopped, hesitated.
Do you ever wonder what would have happened to us if this hadn't?
The truthful answer was no. Up until a few days ago, I didn't want to imagine such a hypothetical, because I never thought of the boy I'd loved, who turned out to be a serial killer. Now that I knew he wasn't, that he had always been that same boy I'd loved, I couldn't bear to. It was a long time ago, Will. We were so young.
We still are. Can we be friends at least?
We can stay in touch, yeah. I wasn't sure that was the truth, but it couldn't hurt to be kind in this moment. There's something I need to know first, though.
Will raised his eyebrows. What?
I need to know exactly what happened the night Liz died, I said. Because I know you talked to her. I know you lied. Allison, now. 10 seconds passed during which Will stayed completely silent. His eyes were down. He barely moved. The Gardaí, I said, back then. They didn't bring you in because I corrected my statement. They brought you in because they knew you'd talked to Liz that night, even though you initially told them you didn't. I've seen Claire Collins' phone records. He looked up, surprised.
Who?
I told him what Malone had told me. There'd been a call from Liz's phone to Will's phone at 3:55 a.m. on the night she died that lasted for 43 seconds. Will maintained that he'd been asleep when the phone had started to ring. And he'd reached out intending to silence it, but had accidentally hit the accept button. On the other end, he suggested, Liz must have accidentally dialed his number. Otherwise, why stay on the line for 43 seconds when no voice came down the line? At first, the Gardaí had been inclined to believe him. But then a witness, Claire, my roommate in St. John's Halls, had come forward to say that Liz had come up to her on Harcourt Street and asked to borrow her phone. Liz said the battery on hers had just died. When the Gardaí checked Claire's mobile phone activity, they found that Liz had used it to call Will a second time, at 4:02 a.m. This time, the call lasted 10 seconds. One accidental answer they could believe, I said now, but two is stretching it. Will hung his head. What happened? I asked. What did you guys talk about? You must have been the last person to speak to her before him.
That's why I didn't want to say anything.
His words were muffled, the sound buried in his chest.
Because I didn't help her.
Help her do what? Will looked up.
She was still in town, he said, and couldn't get a taxi. She thought she'd seen the guy she said had been following her. Or maybe it was some other weird guy. I'm not sure. She was rambling, not making much sense. She sounded... At the time, I thought she was drunk. But now, looking back on it, I think maybe she was just scared.
I concentrated on breathing to steady myself. In, out, in. The world was threatening to tilt crazily and slide again.
She wanted me to come meet her, he said. She didn't want to walk home alone. Didn't want to have to deal with campus security, because she'd be coming back in after the curfew, and I...
He shook his head, as if disgusted with himself.
I said no. I couldn't be bothered, to be honest. I hung up on her and went back to sleep. A few minutes later, she rang again. Claire wasn't coming back to Hull's. She was going somewhere else. I said just go wherever Claire was going. Walk home when it's bright. That wasn't far away. An hour, maybe an hour and a half. She didn't want to do that, and I didn't want to do anything except go back to sleep. So I did.
He swallowed.
And now I'll have to live with that for the rest of my life.
She didn't call me, I said.
Will shook his head. She didn't think you'd answer.
I let this sink in. Then I said, so you knew I wasn't there all night, all along?
Yes and no. You weren't in the bed when I woke up, but the light was on in the bathroom, and I was still half asleep. And then when I woke up in the morning, you were there. You were already dressed, but I assumed you'd brought those clothes in a bag or something. I just thought you'd stayed the whole night. But to be honest, Allie, I didn't think too much about it. I was more worried about whether or not you knew Liz had called, and whether or not you'd be mad at me for not going to get her. You didn't mention it, so I said nothing. And then, well, then we got the news.
A beat of thick, heavy silence.
I should have gone,
Will said.
I know. If I had...
You don't know that.
I think I do.
Well, if you failed her, I said, so did I.
You're only 19.
Yeah, I said, looking at him. Exactly. More silence. You told the Gardaí all that? I asked then.
Yeah, Will said, but not right away. That was the problem. My mistake. Well, my second one. I should have just been honest with them from the start. I didn't.
He smiled sadly.
I actually didn't want to tell them because I was so embarrassed about it, so ashamed. I thought they'd think I was the worst person in the world. Can you believe that? I was worried about what kind of person they thought I was, when I should have been worried about the fact that they suspected me of 5 murders.
You probably couldn't even imagine it, let alone anticipate it.
Yeah, well, it was hours in when I finally came clean. And then, of course, they thought I was lying, because I'd spent so long telling them I hadn't talked to Liz at all. That was like, I don't know, fuel for them or something. Proof that I was a liar. I was so tired by then, I couldn't even think straight. But they were like stronger than ever. They had me now. That's what it felt like. It was all downhill from there. I didn't know how to get things back to normal. Everything, it had gone too far.
God, I rubbed at my face. Don't you wish we could go back and do it all over again, but right this time?
All the time. But the past is behind us now, and we can't change it.
No. Our eyes met. I better go, I said.
Okay.
I hope you like it out there.
Will looked surprised. You won't be back again?
No.
Oh. His shoulders slumped. Okay.
I stood up.
Allie?
Yeah? Slowly, Will got up too and came around to my side of the table. He looked at me, as if for permission, and then pulled me into a hug.
Thank you, he said into my hair. I mean that, really. If it wasn't for you, I'd be staying in here, I know. I know it's probably not appropriate, and you don't have to respond. In fact, please don't. But I just want to say to you, just one more time, I love you.
I couldn't say it back, but I wanted to give him something, so I said. I loved you.
That's enough,
he said after a beat.
That's enough.
Malone was waiting outside. He took my hand and we started down the corridor. My lips were trembling, tears threatening. I'd been fine in the room, but now the shock of it, the truth of it, the enormity of it, was hitting home. It was over. Will was getting out. Yet in other ways, it was only just beginning.
The after I thought I'd made it 10 years into had just been swept clean away. The pain was once again fresh. I had to start all over again. Malone squeezed my hand. I nodded in response because I couldn't speak. Tears were spilling out now, down my cheeks. He stopped and pulled me into his arms.
"So, I have a question for you," he said. "Is now a good time to go cushion shopping?"
Will, 1 week ago. The words floated up out of the background noise, slowly rearranging the molecules of Will's attention, pulling on it, demanding it, until all trace of sleep had been banished and he was sitting up in bed, awake and alert. Gardaí are appealing for witnesses after the body of St. John's College student Jennifer Madden, 19, was recovered from the Grand Canal early yesterday morning. It was coming from a radio, tuned to a local station, it sounded like. A national one would probably have reminded listeners that the Grand Canal was in Dublin. The rest of the news bulletin had been drowned out by the shrill ring of a telephone. As per the rules, the door to Will's room was propped open. He leaned forward now until he could see through the doorway and out into the corridor. The nurse's station was directly opposite. Alec was standing there, holding his laminated ID to his chest with one hand as he reached across the counter to pick up the phone with the other. In the moment between the silencing of the phone's ring and Alec's voice saying, "Unit 3, Will caught another snippet. Head injury. And by then he was up, standing, trying to decide what to do, wondering if there was anything he could do, unsure whether he should do anything at all. He might just make things worse. He looked around, at his small, bare room, the grate on the window, the yellowing sheets on the narrow bed, and rolled his eyes for thinking things could get any worse. But actually they could. He could be moved to Clover Hill, a proper prison. There'd been talk of it for a while now. He'd done his best to convince Dr. Carter that he should remain in the CPH, which was probably a resort hotel compared to Clover Hill. But he wasn't sure it had worked. Time was running out to get out of here. Until now his plan was to potentially come clean. One of the other patients had mentioned a recent case to him where the charge was downgraded from murder to manslaughter, a case that actually involved a drowning. Both charges came with a maximum penalty of life imprisonment, but manslaughter usually got 10 to 15 years, and there was every chance that if Will's charge was changed, his sentence would be too. He might even get out straight away on time already served. That had been his plan, but it was fraught with problems. Getting someone to listen to him, getting someone, anyone, to believe that he was telling the truth now, but had been convinced to lie back then. Even if it worked, there was no knowing what the outcome would be. He might end up in Clover Hill anyway, and he might have to stay there for the rest of his natural life, having played his only remaining card. But now there was a girl in the canal. A new girl. What if he had put her there? Will had always been convinced that the man who had done it would kill again. That kind of thing, it wasn't an isolated killing spree. That guy wasn't out there now being normal. He'd have to do it again. He hated to say such a thing, but Will hoped he would. Because it would be a lot easier for him if the Gardaí finally got the right guy, the actual canal killer, than it would be for Will to try to convince them that he wasn't him. He was just a scapegoat. The guy the canal killer had framed. He should never have answered the phone that night. Every minute of every day after, he would wish he hadn't. Liz had sounded hysterical, upset, crying down the phone. At first she was talking about Ali and something they were fighting about, but then her tone changed and she said,
"Oh God, Will, I know this is awful to ask, but can you come meet me by any chance? There's, like, no taxis, and I don't want to walk home alone."
She lowered her voice to a whisper.
"That weird guy, the red-haired guy, he's here. He's across the street from me staring. I bet he'll follow me back."
Still half asleep, Will had said,
"Where are you?" "Harcourt Street, by the Lewis stop. But hang on."
Muffled sounds, like Liz was talking to someone there while holding the phone to her chest. Then,
"But these guys, they're heading for Trinity, so I could go with them as far as Stephen's Green. Would that be better?"
Lying in bed, Will rolled his eyes. Stephen's Green was still 10-15 minutes walk away, and 15 minutes walk back, and it was 4 in the morning, and he'd been asleep. But what if something happened to Liz? What if he said no, I can't be arsed, and then something happened to her on the way home? He'd be to blame. Going to meet her was doing the right thing. Okay, he said, throwing back the sheets, sitting up. He noticed that Allie wasn't there, that the sheets were cold. He had a vague recollection of hearing her get up. The bathroom light was on, but there was no noise coming from beyond its door. Had she gone home? I'll meet you there. Wait, where in Stephen's Green? Top of Leeson Street? No response. Liz? He pulled his phone away from his ear and heard the beep, beep, beep of a disconnection. Now he was confused. Had they agreed to meet? Did Liz hang up because she thought he was already on his way to Stephen's Green? He got dressed. The phone rang again. He didn't recognize the number, but it was Liz on the line again. Sorry, she said. My phone's died. The ATM at the top of Leeson Street. Is that okay? Give me 15 minutes, Will said. Well, 10. He grabbed his keys, left the room. As soon as the apartment door locked behind him, he realized he'd forgotten his phone. But was there any point going back for it? Liz's phone was dead and he'd be coming straight back here. He decided not to bother. No one knew exactly what would happen if he tried to get on or off campus after the infamous curfew, but Will discovered now that the answer was not very much. There was a security guard at the exit onto Haddington Road, but all he did was nod at him. Maybe it'd be harder to get back in, but from the looks of things, he doubted it. Will followed the canal up to Leeson Street Bridge and turned from there onto Leeson Street Lower. He jogged most of the route, both trying to get there quicker and trying to wake himself up. It was deathly quiet out. The place was practically deserted. He passed one, maybe two other people on his walk, and he suspected one of them was a plainclothes garda, going by the suspicious look the man gave him. It'd be light within the hour. Liz gave him a big wave when she saw him, then started hurrying towards him. Her eye makeup was smudged, and her pupils were enlarged, but he'd known she was drunk before he'd got close enough to see that. She was wobbling slightly, teetering on her heels. She grabbed his right arm and linked her left through it.
Thanks so much for this, she said. I owe you big time.
No problem, he murmured. He wondered what Allie would think about it when he told her tomorrow morning. At first, everything was fine. They just chatted easily about Liz's night. But when they reached the bridge, she said something about a stone in her shoe and led Will a few feet off the path, down to the water's edge, to one of the benches overlooking the dark canal.
Sit down, she said to him when he didn't. We should get going, Liz. I want to talk to you about something.
Now? He looked up and down the canal. There was no one around, and the air was cold and sharp. They were equidistant between two streetlights. The thick trees that separated the canal bank from the main road made the shadows darker still. He wished he was in bed, that he could be magically teleported back there.
It won't take long, Liz said.
He moved to go.
Let's do it on the way back. Allie and I, we had a fight. Did she tell you about it?
No. He was not going to talk to Liz about Allie when Allie wasn't there, especially when he didn't even know what they'd talked about earlier.
Let's go, Liz, come on.
Liz wasn't looking at him now, but at the water in front of her. She was hunched over on the bench, her elbows on her knees.
I told her, she said, that I like you.
She looked up at him.
I like you, Will, the same way she likes you.
He didn't know what was happening, but he knew he needed to stop it.
Liz, he said, let's go, now, come on. Didn't you hear what I said?
I think you've been drinking.
Tonight, yes, I have. That's true. But I felt this way for months.
In his mind's eye, Will was seeing himself having to relay this conversation to Allie. He groaned inwardly at the thought, especially because knowing Liz, she'd twist it all around, make it sound like something else had happened here. Like that time she'd told Allie they'd had lunch together, when the truth was they'd spoken for a couple of minutes in the main drag of a shopping center. He tried one more time.
Let's go back, Liz, please. Can't we talk about this first? I don't know what you want me to say. Say what you think.
I think I'm with Allie.
So you don't have feelings for me?
She stood up, came to stand next to him, close to him, reached out a hand, pressed it against his chest.
That night, at the ball, I thought I felt...
Liz, no. He pushed her hand away. He laughed, trying to defuse the situation.
This is ridiculous. Why?
Because I'm with Ali.
Is that the only reason?
Isn't that reason enough? He meant. Ali is your best friend and I'm her boyfriend, so why are we even having this conversation? But Liz didn't hear that. Liz heard. Yes, that's the only reason. Liz heard. Yes, because I have feelings for you too. That could be the only explanation, because then there was a blur of movement as she stepped closer, and then he felt her lips on his.
Liz!
He moved back, catching his foot on the uneven surface, the muddy grass here at the edge of the canal, feet from the thick buffer of tall reeds that separated them from the glassy black water. How had doing a good deed turned into this shit? When he'd righted himself again, he said, Look, I'm going back now. Follow me or don't. He went to leave, but she stepped in front of him, blocking his way.
You're just going to leave me out here? Alone? What would Ali say about that, Will?
What would she say about what you've been saying to me?
I don't know.
Liz folded her arms.
But I can't imagine she's going to be very happy about the fact that we kissed. She seemed pretty upset about it when I just sat on your lap, so...
Will felt the brush of a cold dread. We did not. Kiss, he said, slowly, pronouncing each word distinctly so there could be no mistake. Liz glared at him.
We did whatever I say we did.
Right, he said. That's it. Make your own way home. He turned his back to her and started back towards the path.
Will, wait!
It happened then. She caught his left hand. To stop him, he'd think later, when he was replaying every single moment of this through his mind for the millionth time. Angry now, frustrated, annoyed, he swung around and pulled his hand from hers at the same time. He's pretty sure it went like this. And the force of that, the unexpectedness of it, the momentum, pulled Liz towards him, towards where he'd been standing. And if he'd stayed there, if he'd just stood still, she would have been fine. He'd have been fine. Everything would have been fine. But he moved. So then Liz was moving towards empty space, and then she kept coming, falling forwards, falling over. And he saw that she had her other hand in her pocket, so she'd only the wand to try to break her fall, and it didn't quite work. She needed them both. And she hit the ground, face down, hard. And then... Silence. For a second he didn't move, didn't breathe, didn't think.
What the?
Then, all at once, full panic mode. Every single cell in his body suddenly flooded with adrenaline, bubbling white hot with it, sending his heart rate soaring, his pulse thundering in his ears.
Act!
He dropped to his knees and rolled Liz over. She was alive. She was breathing, but unconscious. A horrible gash streaked across her forehead. It was bleeding freely and had bits of leaves and dirt stuck to it. He looked where her head had been and saw the remnants of a broken beer bottle caught in the tangles of a root, pushing up out of the muddy grass.
Help.
He should get help, but his phone was back in his room, and he knew that wherever Liz's was, it was dead. And it's that, this delay, that gave him a moment to...
Think.
He thought about what this looked like, about what people would think of him, about how he was 19 years, 6 months, and 3 weeks old, and it took just 1 second, after all that, to do this bad thing, to change everything. It was an accident, truly, honestly, genuinely an accident. But is that what Liz will say it had been? It all flashed through his head in an instant. Liz saying he attacked her, him being charged with it, getting kicked out of college. What his parents would think of that. A criminal record. Prison, maybe. He'd never get a job. Mightn't even be able to travel. And he'd never, ever get to practice law now. He wasn't even sure he wanted to, but he knew that's what his father had planned for him. His whole life. Destroyed. over this one second. And Ali, losing her, maybe even her believing this, over just one second. And that's when the panic turned to cold calculation. He would remember it later as a distinct moment, like downshifting gears in a car. The first part, yes, that was an accident. But what came next was not. Will felt like he'd been in the room at the Garda station for hours, days maybe. He'd lost all track of time, and he was tired. So, so tired. He was having trouble speaking coherent words. He didn't have the energy left to string sentences together. He just wanted to sleep. He wanted to go home. Not back to Hall's, but back to his parents' house. He wanted to talk to his parents. He needed to get out. He knew now he'd made a huge mistake. "We know what happened," Detective Shaw was saying. "We already know. We know everything. We know all the details. The exact sequence of events, who was where, who did what, when. All we need is for you to confirm for us. We're just trying to help you out here, Will. You help us, we help you. You want to see your parents, right? You asked for your dad. We can bring him in. But first we need to hear some truth from you."
"I'm not the canal killer," Will said.
His voice was weak, every word scratchy against the dry walls of his throat.
"This is crazy."
"How did you get them in the water, Will? How did you get them in without them making any noise? That's the bit I can't figure out." "Just tell us the truth, and we can get you out of this room, Will. Come on now. You'll feel better. Look, I'll tell you what. I'll say what I think happened, and you just confirm yay or nay, okay? That might be easier for you. I know this is hard." Will shook his head.
"I didn't do anything."
"Will, we know what happened that night," Shaw said, looking right in his eyes. "I know you're lying. Do you know how I know? Because when you first came in, you said you didn't talk to Liz that night. You promised me, you swore, over and over again for hours, even though I told you I knew the truth. Then, lo and behold, the second I bring in Claire Collins' mobile phone records, you say, okay, okay, I actually did talk to her. So you know what that tells me, Will? That tells me you're a liar. A good one. But it's time for the truth now." Shaw paused here. "Just tell us what happened, Will. Tell us what happened with Liz." There'd been hours of this. Hours and hours. He didn't know any more if it was day or night. They let him take breaks, but they wouldn't let him sleep. He hadn't slept much the night before either. Ali had been so upset, and whenever he closed his eyes, he saw himself by the canal, being the reason. They couldn't know, though. How could they? And if they did know what had really happened, they wouldn't be accusing him of the other ones, too. Would they? He must be safe. He just needed to stay alert, to stay awake, to get through this until he got out of it. Back at the canal, he'd pushed Liz into the water, knowing she was unconscious, knowing she would drown in there, imagining, hoping, that when they discovered her, the canal killer would get the blame. It was the only answer at the time, the only way to prevent that one second from destroying the decades of his life he had left. Now he didn't understand what was happening, why they thought he was the canal killer. And he was so tired he couldn't think straight. "You can't get out of this," Shaw said. "Do you understand me? We've collected evidence against you. We know exactly what happened. We just need to hear it from you. Look, Will, we all make mistakes. Things happen in the heat of the moment. Nobody's perfect. Maybe you didn't mean to hurt those girls. But if you don't tell us what happened, we can't help you here. Cooperation is key, Will. Come on now. Help us help you." "We all make mistakes. In the heat of the moment. Help us help you." "I'm not the canal killer," Will said again. But he was a killer. He'd taken someone's life. If he'd just called an ambulance. If he'd had his phone. It didn't matter what she was going to say about him. She didn't deserve what he'd done. No one did. The guilt, the remorse, it was like a physical substance bubbling up in his chest, pushing its way up his throat and out into... "Okay," he said. Shaw leaned forward, suddenly alert. Okay, what?
I did it.
What? Will started to cry.
Liz!
I need more than that, Will. He explained as best he could what had happened. The relief of finally telling the truth filled his ears like the sound of rushing water. He didn't even hear half of what Shaw said to him, until he said something about the other girls.
What?
Through the fog of his thoughts, the rush of relief, Will heard a distant alarm bell.
No, no, there were no other girls. I don't know anything about them. It was just Liz. And that was an accident, I swear.
Yeah, Shaw said. Look, Will, I'm going to pop out now for a bit, so you can lie down on that couch there and have a nap. Then we'll resume for another hour or so, and then you can bed down for the night. But listen to me. Don't waste our time. I want you to think about this. Don't waste my time, or yours, when I come back in. You've just spent the whole day telling me you didn't do anything, and now you say you killed Liz. So you were lying to me, like I knew you were, since the moment you came into this room. Now, we can go through what we just did over and over, one time for each girl and get to the truth. Or, you can save us all the bother, quit the shit, cut the crap and admit to them all when I come back in. Okay? You think about that.
No, I didn't.
Shaw stood up. I'll see you in a bit.
No, please.
Get some rest now.
But I'm telling the truth.
Yeah, finally. That's good. Good for you and good for me. Now we can get somewhere, maybe. I want more of it when I come back, okay?
But...
Shaw was gone. The door had closed again, and Will was left alone in the room. He wasn't even sure what had just happened, but he knew if he'd been in some trouble before, he was in a hell of a lot more of it now, and he didn't know what to do. He put his head down on the table and started to cry. When Will saw Shaw again, he was being formally charged. They'd found evidence, a notebook or something in his locker, a spot of blood in his room. He didn't know what was happening. It was only later, in the weeks and months to come, that he'd begin to consider that the real killer had got wind of his arrest and had seen an easy way out. No one was interested in the truth, it seemed to him. After a while, not even he was. He'd killed a girl, taken a life. No, he hadn't put his hands around her neck and strangled her. But he may as well have. He'd put her in the water, knowing she wouldn't, couldn't get out, and let the water do the dirty work for him. He deserved to be in here. He was a killer. But as time went on, the dark cloud that had numbed him those first few months, those early years, began to lift. Yes, he'd done something awful, something horrific, something truly bad. But it had been a second's action when he was only 19. It was not something he'd ever do again. Sometimes he couldn't even believe he'd done it that time. Was his whole life a suitable punishment? Or was 10 years just about enough? And now, the news bulletin. Gardaí appealing for witnesses after the body of St. John's College student Jennifer Madden, 19, was recovered from the Grand Canal early yesterday morning. Head injury. What if he was at it again? Out there. The real guy. Could this be Will's way out? He'd have to be careful, to think everything through, and he'd have to find someone who might actually believe him. Who was left? He could only think of one person. The one person he'd never even got to profess his innocence to. But how could he get her to come and see him? He decided to speak to Alec. They were friends, or at least what qualified as friends in here. Friend Lee. Will waited until the nurse had finished on the phone, before he crossed the corridor.
Acknowledgements. Before the thanks, an apology. Dublin City, I've messed with you a bit. I've demolished the National Print Museum at Beggar's Bush and put a fictional university in there instead. I've also renamed the Central Mental Hospital in Dundrum and modernised its facilities. So apologies to Dublin, a city I love, and apologies to any reader who goes down Haddington Road looking for the entrance to St. John's. You won't find it. If it's any consolation, you will find the cafe with the white picket fence, and inside it, excellent coffee. First and foremost, huge thanks to this book's midwives, my editors Sarah O'Keefe and Stephanie Glenn Cross, who patiently and expertly helped me get this story out of my brain and onto the page. Thanks to my fabulous agent, Jane Gregory, and everyone at Gregory & Company, Corvus Books, Blackstone Publishing, and Gil Hess. Thanks to Hazel Gaynor and Sheena Lambert for the gin, the wings, the infinite email threads, and everything else in between. Thanks to all the lovely women writers in my life who were so hugely supportive, incredibly generous, and throw epic launch parties. Carmel Harrington, I'm looking at you for the last one. A huge thank you to all the writers, booksellers, reviewers, bloggers, and readers who supported Distress Signals, with special mentions for Liz Nugent, Mark Edwards, Margaret Madden, and everyone I've come to know in the crime scene. Thanks to Ian Harris for being Instagram ready at the Irish Book Awards. Even your idea of hangover food is juice made from the leaves of things. No. And to Andrea Summers, Eva Heppel, and Michelle Oliver, for travelling long distances to be at my book wedding. Book launch. Thanks to Sheila Kelly for always believing, and thanks to the most enthusiastic and occasionally mortifying publicity team an author can have. Mum, Dad, John and Claire. This concludes the reading of The Liar's Girl by Catherine Ryan Howard. Copyright 2018 by Catherine Ryan Howard. This book was read by Alana Kerr Collins, Alan Smith, and Gary Furlong. This unabridged recording was published by arrangement with Blackstone Publishing and was produced in 2018 by Blackstone Audio Inc., which holds the copyright. Neither this recording nor any portion of it may be reproduced or used for any purpose without prior written authorization from Blackstone Audio Inc. If you would like to obtain a monthly update telling you about new releases, call 1-800-SAY-BOOK. That's 1-800-729-2665. For a complete listing of our titles, visit our website at www.downpour.com. Thank you.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.